Hello there, and welcome to episode number 3 of the Dow of Tech podcast, Act Out Against ACTA. The Dow of Tech is going to be your weekly dose in the way of technology. Episodes will be featuring the weekly geeky goings-on of me, your host, Mark Prestash. Shows will generally focus on a couple of tech topics a week. However, this week is just going to be one topic, and that is the ACTA treaty that is currently being negotiated in secret by our government. We're going to get into that in a second, but before I do, I just want to let you guys know that you should stay tuned after the show ends. After the closing music, stay tuned for a promo for Jake Bible's Dead Mech podcast novel. You may recall I discussed Dead Mech in episode 1 of the Dow of Tech. It's one of the podcasts that I listen to and love dearly. So please stay tuned after the show and check out the promo for Jake Bible's Dead Mech. And if you like it and you subscribe, if you download it and you think it's pretty cool, definitely let Jake know that you found out about the show from me and from the Dow of Tech. I'm sure that would go a long way to let him know that we're trying to get the word out for him, and would definitely be cool if you guys did that and let him know that you found out of here. So I would appreciate that very much. So now that we've gotten that little bit out of the way, let's jump into the show. Now, the ACTA Treaty, or the Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement Treaty, is a global copyright treaty that is being negotiated in secret by the United States and several other countries. The negotiations have been going on since 2007, so I guess to give this a little bit of history, we'll do a little bit of the backstory, and then we'll get into the more current stuff. The negotiations have been going on since 2007. According to the parties involved, the ACTA Treaty aims to create a new global intellectual property enforcement regime that builds on the 1994 Agreement on Trade-Related Aspects of Intellectual Property Rights, or TRIPS, T-R-I-P-S. Much of the ACTA Treaty is taken up with trademark protection and counterfeit goods. Quite a large portion of it is regarding physical goods, physical counterfeiting, whether it be money or Louis Vuitton purses or whatever. And I'm not really going to focus too much on that, by not much, I mean not at all. Mostly because this is a tech show, and really talking about Louis Vuitton purses would maybe impress my wife, but I don't think any of you guys really care all that much. Now, the part that we're going to be discussing is the section that covers online copy protection. Now, just a word of note here. Because this treaty is being negotiated in secret, the parties involved have not officially released any documentation regarding what they've been discussing. So all this information has been coming from that I'm going to be discussing, or I shouldn't say all of it, but a good chunk of it is going to be based on leaked documents that have come out and been published on the web. So we're going to be discussing those things that have been purported to have been leaked, and some opinion about what they're saying now. Now, originally, back in October of 2007, it was only the European Commission, Switzerland, and Japan. Those were the first people to announce that they would actually negotiate with the U.S. and other parties regarding this new treaty. Now, since then, countries such as Australia, Canada, Jordan, Mexico, New Zealand, the Republic of Korea, Singapore, and the United Arab Emirates have also joined in the negotiations here. So we've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. We got 12 fairly large countries that have some power here to work this treaty going forward and working on it. Now, according to the European Commission, the goal of ACTA is to establish an international framework that improves the enforcement of existing intellectual property right laws. The Commission states that ACTA is to create improved international standards for actions against large-scale infringements of intellectual property. To this end, ACTA will have three primary components. There's an international cooperation section, enforcement practices, and legal framework for enforcement of intellectual property rights. Now, the ultimate objective, they say, of ACTA is that large emerging economies where intellectual property right enforcement could be improved, i.e. places like China, Russia, and Brazil, will sign up to the global pact. Now, this is, I think, the very first part where the treaty fails. So they're writing a treaty with countries that already have and already enforce intellectual property rights and laws and regulations, making a tougher and harder set of laws and regulations with the hope that other countries would sign on. So right off the bat, they're preaching to the choir. They're negotiating this treaty with countries that are already on board with this thing with the hopes that other countries will join. Which is, again, it's just ridiculous to write a treaty with the hope that other countries would sign on and be able to actually cooperate in any way, shape, or form with what the treaty actually agrees to. Now, according to New Zealand, ACTA aims to facilitate a strong and modern legal framework so that law enforcement agencies, the judiciary, and private citizens have the most up-to-date tools necessary to effectively bring counterfeiters and pirates to justice. Areas for possible ACTA provisions include criminal enforcement, border measures, civil enforcement, optical disc piracy, and internet distribution and information technology. So, that's sort of the stated goals of ACTA and the participants that are actively negotiating this treaty. So now we're going to sort of run into the various drafts of the treaty that have been leaked. We're going to be going into some of the meat of what these drafts have proposed as leaked. So let's get into that portion now. So the drafts that we've seen, it seems like they take a really tough stance on internet service providers, essentially turning them into watchdogs for internet content of all kinds. Now, according to the treaty and how it's being interpreted, it's saying that ISPs will be required to monitor user content and turn over the private information of users to quote-unquote combat online piracy. They may even be forced to subject customers to a three strikes you're out provision. Essentially, that's where you can be cut off from your internet service as a result of accusations of piracy, and this is really irrelevant of those accusations having any merit or having been proven in a court of law. So essentially what they're saying is, say, Time Warner says that you have illegally downloaded, or I should say, accuses you of illegally downloading material three times, the potential is there for your ISP to cut you off. And not just cut you off, but cut off anybody else that's living in the house or the apartment or the condo that you're living at. So it doesn't just affect you, the person, it affects the entire household that connection is attached to. On a positive note, the European Commission has pledged to make sure that the ACTA treaty does not force countries to disconnect people for unlawfully downloading copyrighted music, movies, or other material. But, you know, at this point, again, it's sort of up in the air as to whether that's going to be in there or not. You know, I don't know if all parties have to agree to it, but it's in the most current version that has been leaked. This, by the way, is coming from zdnet.co.uk. This little bit of information I just passed along to you here. Now, the ACTA Treaty would also strengthen the types of anti-circumvention laws that are already found in the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, or DMCA, that we have unfortunately been living underneath the yoke of in the U.S. for quite some time. Now, these provisions prevent you from breaking any technological copyright protection, even for what might be fair use. Now, that's why it's technically illegal, I repeat, illegal, for you to make a backup copy of a DVD that you currently own. Now, this is something that's been pushed on us and has been, and the legislation and the DMCA and Now, and the ACTA treaty that's being negotiated is being pushed and forced down the throats of us, thanks to the motion picture individuals and the RIAA, who are obviously spearheading these anti-circumvention, the verbiage that's being used here. And this is where it gets kind of ridiculous. Now, I'm gonna give you a couple of examples where fair use really should be a completely valid argument here, but is completely considered to be breaking the law according to this treaty. Now, the first one is that teachers right now are, at least they used to be anyway, they had the right to make a copy of a movie or portion of a movie for educational purposes. You know, think your science class, your health class, any kind of class, I suppose, in theory, could use some sort of media to augment or provide an example of a certain type of work or whatever that may be. Now, this would be illegal underneath ACTA. So here's what it comes down to, is that once something that was once legal, where an educator could make a copy of something for educational purposes, is now considered to be completely, wholeheartedly, without exception, illegal to do. Just can't do it. They're robbing the educators of a potential tool that would help the future of America and other countries, you know, in the future, in learning something, in gaining knowledge. That pisses me off. The other thing that I do not like about this one bit, and this is more of a personal thing, is that I have two wonderful yet destructive young children. I've got a little boy and I've got a little girl, and they love their DVD movies, and we are happy to go out and go to the store and plonk down $15, $20 on whatever the new release of whatever movie it is that they want to see. And I have no problem going out and putting the money down for that DVD. The problem is that, like I said, they're destructive. They do not know how to treat a DVD, and as such, they fuck them up. They're scratched. They break. They get dinged. They get dented. I can only clean them so much, and I can only buff out the scratches so many times before it just becomes completely unreadable in my DVD player, or their DVD player for that matter. Here's the thing, is if I had a fair use right to make one legal backup of that DVD, I wouldn't care, because if the kids did something stupid to that DVD, who cares? I go to my computer, I fire up my burning software, and I reburn the DVD, and in 15 minutes I give it to my kid and I say, okay, I know that the version got crapped up, here's a new one, go ahead. And not worry about it. But I can't do that under the DMCA, and I can't do that under ACTA. It makes it illegal. I am breaking the law because I am circumventing copyright protection that is built onto the DVD. Now, okay, some people could say, well, you know what, then you can just go out and buy yourself a new DVD because, you know, kids are destructive and it's still not fair to make a backup copy of something that you already own, something that you already purchased. Just go out and buy a new copy because that'll keep the money going to the people that need it, because the content providers have to maintain their awful model of business. Well, to them I say fuck you, because here's the thing. If I go out and I buy my daughter, say, the 25th or the 40th anniversary Walt Disney Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs collection, well, you know what? That's a limited release. That comes out, they press 100,000 copies or a million copies or whatever, and once they're gone, or the vault is closed, as Disney says, that's it. You cannot buy that DVD in a store anymore. Once it is off the shelves, it is off the shelves. Yeah, sure, there's eBay, and yeah, sure, there's Craigslist, but I'm not gonna pay $50 for a DVD that I paid $25 for at retail. So, again, my point is I'm not trying to make a copy of a movie and then go down to my local swap meet and sell them for $10 a piece. I'm not doing that. I'm just want to make a legal backup of a movie that I have legally purchased and want to purchase, but in some cases can't for whatever reason, again, so giving me that legal right to make that backup copy is tantamount to fair use. You have to give me some fair use on this DVD. Now, at some point, you know, CDs used to be that way too, where you weren't supposed to rip them, and they finally gave up on that. They said, you know what, go ahead and rip them to your hard drive. Who cares? Movies have to come into that realm as well. You have to allow that kind of usage, because essentially what they're saying is that you don't actually own what you purchased. If you purchased that DVD, yeah, sure, you purchased it, but all you purchased is the right to play it. That is it, people. If you didn't know that, wake up, smell the coffee, and realize the truth, that when you buy a DVD, all you're buying is the right to play it, and a DVD player, probably Region 1 if you're in the U.S., that will play that DVD. Nothing else comes along with purchasing that DVD. Nothing. You get nothing other than the right to play it. That is it. So, you know, it comes down to fair use. That they have to be reasonable, they have to be logical, and they have to understand that this is 2010. This is not 1975 or 1990. This is 2010, okay? I mean, technology speaking, we are superior to any of the time that we've ever lived, and ripping a DVD to a hard drive is a 15-minute process. It takes nothing. It hurts no one in the process. So please, guys, let's get this portion straight. Fair use on DVD ripping has got to be something that we as Americans and we as citizens of the world have got to stand up for. It's something that we definitely need to have. And not having it now and the ACTS treaty is only going to make that worse on us. Now, getting back to the ISPs for a moment, because that's actually where I think we had started. The draft that I had used to base this podcast on gave some immunity to the ISPs. It says that ISPs are protected from copyright lawsuits so long as they have no direct responsibility for infringement. So essentially, if the infringement really happens over their network, the infringers are responsible, but the ISP is not. Sort of like the telephone company is not being responsible for people using the telephone to break the law. They're not responsible unless they have some sort of pre-knowledge of this. Now, this provision currently mirrors existing U.S. and European law, but now two key points have to be made here. First, the entire ISP safe harbor is on a conditional basis, and the conditions are two things. First, the ISP has to be adopting and reasonably implementing a policy to address the unauthorized storage or transmission of materials protected by copyright. Now, a footnote provides a single example of such a policy. So, providing for termination in appropriate circumstances of subscribers and accounts in the service provider's network or system of repeat infringers. Now, in other words, this is some variation of a three strikes. So, if you look at this a little bit deeper here, it's saying that in order for the ISP to maintain its safe harbor position of not being liable, they have to be implementing a policy that verifies and checks for unauthorized storage or transmission of materials protected by copyright. This is going to be data inspection, deep packet inspection, everything you send and or receive over the internet, according to this, has got to be viewed by the ISP for being potentially unlawful and or law-breaking. Now, how they can tell that a movie is or music is unauthorized or an illegal copy, I don't know. Like, for example, the music I use for this podcast comes from PodSafe Audio, where they essentially say, you know, this is free music for you guys to use. You know, it's I mean, some of it is covered by copyright law, but it's more in the sense that I can't sell the music as my own or make money off it without consent of the artist. Essentially, it's free music to use for podcasts. Now, if I'm sending that music file to somebody, how is my ISP going to know, A, that it's a music file, and B, that music file, which is legitimately free for me to use and download, how are they going to know that that's a legal version versus an illegal version of music? I don't understand how they would know that. It just seems to be almost technologically impossible to figure out what it is and where it came from. I mean, if I get the file and I add my own ID3 tags to it and whatever else, there's nothing about the original other than the file itself. I mean, that they would have to go back on. I mean, how would they know these things? I mean, how would they be able to tell a legitimate legal file versus an illegal file? Now, for example, too, now, let's say I have a legally purchased MP3 on my work laptop, and I say, oh, you know what, I'm not going to take my laptop home today, I'm just going to email myself that MP3, and email it to myself at home. Again, how is that ISP going to know? All they're going to say is, oh, gee, it's got an Amazon MP3 thing in here, oh, this must be illegally stolen, or what. How are they going to know that I purchased that MP3, and I'm simply emailing it to myself on from one machine to another, so I don't have to bring my laptop home? I mean, how are they going to know that? They're not, is the answer, people. They're not going to know. But I guarantee you, if they have to put this type of data inspection in place, there are going to be a lot of false positives. And I mean a lot of false positives. It's ridiculous. So, now the other point here that we want to talk about is the footnote that I had mentioned earlier, where it talks about providing for termination in appropriate circumstances of subscriptions and accounts in the service provider system or network of repeat infringers. Again, people, we're talking about a three strikes, you're out law. This was just voted into law in the UK, okay? They're doing it. So if you think it can't happen here, just look over there and you'll see how quickly it can happen. But again, it comes down to these problems of what are these quote-unquote appropriate circumstances? How many times must somebody be a repeat offender before the provision applies? And again, it comes down to how does the ISP know for certain that someone is an infringer? Okay? Now, the other thing, too, that we can talk about here is the accusation of being a file sharer or illegally downloading or transferring some copyrighted material. There's no court involved here. There is no court. It's not like Time Warner says to me, hey Mark, I think you downloaded one of our crappy-ass movies over BitTorrent, so we're going to take you to court. And they win in court, and the court says, yep, Mark downloaded that movie, he's guilty, there's strike one. It doesn't work that way. The accusation counts as a strike. There's no proof involved here. No proof at all. The accusation is the conviction right there. If you are accused of this, you're considered guilty. And there's no court involved. There's no legal situation where they contact a lawyer and they try to get in touch with you and rectify this. They just accuse you, and that's that. You could potentially be knocked off the internet by the accusation of being a copyright infringer. Now, what if, let's just see, for example, maybe you have an enemy. I don't have any enemies, hopefully, but what if I had an enemy? That person says, you know, I'm going to fuck Mark over big time here. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to accuse him 3, 4, 5, 6 times, however many times it takes. Just accuse him of illegally downloading stuff until his internet provider shuts him down. Because there's no court involved, because there's no actual legal proceeding involved, that could happen. Highly possible that could happen. Here's where, again, ACTA sort of contradicts itself here. It's sort of goofy. So, now, the draft that I saw, it says that, and they make this very clear, that governments cannot mandate internet filtering even in the pursuit of these repeat infringers. The government can't mandate anything about a treaty that's being negotiated in secret that requires ISPs to do deep-level inspection. So how do they expect this to happen? If they honestly, I mean, think about it. If they don't mandate this, how else is it going to happen? I mean, if they don't require this sort of deep filtering to be going on, why and how on earth would these ISPs even do this? It's ridiculous. Now, getting back to the topic at hand of ISP immunity, the ISP immunity is conditioned on the existence of a takedown process. Now, we here in the U.S. have been living with this infamous DMCA takedown notice for a number of years now. Essentially, that's a dance that starts with a letter from a rights holder. Once received an ISP or a website or a host, whatever, they have to take down the content listed in order to maintain its immunity, but it can be reposted if the uploader responds with a counter notification asserting that no infringement has taken place. Now, after this, if the rights holder wants to pursue the matter, they have 14 days to take actual legal action. This is, again, it's like, you know, you're accused of something, you can then fight it, and you can still win, but I don't think that erases the initial accusation. So you can be accused and fight it 3 or 4 times and still, quote-unquote, win and get your, whatever your uninfringing information or data back up online, those could still count as strikes against you. Those things could still be used against you by your ISP. Well, the active draft that we've seen would adopt the quote-unquote best parts of the DMCA, which is the safe harbors provision. It also, as I had said, adopts the worst part, which is the bypassing of DRM locks and everything else. And the verbiage that we see in the leaked version says that the ACTA would ban the unauthorized circumvention of an effective technological measure that controls access to a protected work, performance, or phonogram. It also bans circumvention devices, even those with a limited commercially significant purpose. Countries can set the limits to the ban, but only insofar as they do not, quote-unquote, impair the adequacy of legal protection of those measures. Now, this is ambiguous at best, but, you know, as I said earlier, you know, allowing circumvention in cases where fair use just seems to be the right thing to do, but according to this, it just, again, it just is flat out outlawed. There is no fair use under the ACTA Treaty. It just doesn't exist. There's no exceptions. There's no loopholes. There's nothing. It's really not a good set of things that have been laid out in the section for the intellectual property right on the internet. I briefly mentioned this in the beginning of the show, but the ACTA Treaty it's being negotiated in secret. These countries that are involved, some of them, like the European Union, have actually just recently released documentation regarding the ACTA Treaty, but for all intents and purposes, there's nothing out there. I mean, there's no discussion going on, there's nothing really being discussed too much in the public about it. The things that we've discussed on this podcast clearly to me are being spearheaded by the music industry and the movie industry, who, in my opinion, are just trying to protect their dying business model because they just don't want to come up with a viable digital strategy for either streaming movies or purchasing movies. The concept of fair use is just obviously unheard of by these people. These people must not have kids, because if they had kids, they would know that the ability and the right to back up a DVD is a necessity. I think the ultimate irony of the ACTA Treaty is that just recently, the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, just admitted that most of the piracy estimates that have been floated out to the public are patently incorrect. All right, so here's the deal. I had to hit pause on the recording for a minute here to pull up the story here. It's on Ars Technica titled, "The U.S. Government Finally Admits Most Piracy Estimates Are Bogus." And here's the essence of the story. So the federal government, like I said, the Government Accountability Office, was tasked under the Pro-IP treaty or law that was put into effect here to monitor and try to figure out ways to combat piracy. There's all these numbers that are being thrown about how much piracy actually costs U.S. industry and dollars and jobs and the value of a infringed file download. So this is the quote here. So the government's internal watchdog took a close look at quote-unquote efforts to quantify the economic effects of counterfeit and pirated goods. After examining all the data and consulting with numerous experts inside and outside of government, the Government Accountability Office concluded that it is difficult, if not impossible, to quantify the economic-wide impacts of piracy. More specific studies that focus on a single industry don't fare much better, according to the article. It says the illicit nature of counterfeiting and piracy makes estimating the economic impact of IP infringements extremely difficult. When it comes time to choose a substitution rate, how much of the infringing activity should be counted as a lost sale, we're only left with, quote, assumptions, which have an enormous impact on the resulting estimates. So the federal government themselves are saying that the economic impact and the numbers that are reported are complete bullshit. The kicker is that I'm sure a lot of these numbers were used and are being used by the media companies that are helping to write the ACTA treaty. Now, again, this related to the Pro-IP Act, which was passed under President Bush. President Obama now has appointed an IP enforcement coordinator within the White House. And apparently it's their duty to gather data on piracy and counterfeiting, to try to find ways to reduce it. Now, alongside ACTA, and then on top of the government figuring out that, hey, you know what, these numbers are total bullshit, because this story came out, about 3 days ago as of this writing. I'm trying to find the date here, but I actually don't see a date in the story. On April 15th, on Boing Boing, Cory Doctorow wrote a little blurb about the title, long, but I think very apt. It says, "Big Contents Dystopian Wish List for the U.S. Government. Spyware, censorship, physical searches, and SWAT teams." Apparently, the MPAA and the RIAA have submitted documentation to the Office of Intellectual Property Enforcement, which is the Pro-IP folks. And this is what they want the Pro-IP czar, Victoria Espinel, this is what was submitted to her by the MPAA and the RIAA as effective means of combating piracy. There's five things here. They want people to voluntarily install spyware on your computer that detects and deletes infringing materials. They want mandatory censorship on all internet connections to interdict transfers of infringing material. They want border searches of personal media players, laptops, and thumb drives. They want an international force in other countries to implement the same policies, and a free copyright enforcement provided by federal police and federal agencies, including the Department of Homeland Security. This is ludicrous. Now, this is a quote from the story here. It doesn't say who actually said it, so I'm going to give the credit to the RIAA and or the MPAA. Take your pick. Take your pick of which institution you want to credit this quote to. There are several technologies and methods that can be used by network administrators and providers. These include consumer tools for managing copyright infringement from the home, based on tools used to protect consumers from viruses and malware. So essentially, they want something like someone like Norton Antivirus to include a part of their code that looks for infringing copyrighted material. And they want people to do this voluntarily. What crack did they smoke? I mean, seriously, this is ridiculous. So let's just take this point by point if we can here. They want you to install spyware on your computer that detects and deletes infringing materials. Who the hell would voluntarily put that on their computer? I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, come on, people. Seriously? Now, again, they mentioned ISP filtering in theory, or I should say, they intimate it because they say that they want the internet connections to interdict transfers of infringing material. How else can you do that other than deep packet inspection? I mean, I don't see any other way to do it other than that, because how else would they know what you're doing unless they inspect your data? This one gets me the most. Border searches of personal media players, laptops, and thumb drives. So the border agent who's tasked, you know, it's his or her job to look for people trying to illegally cross the border, looking for people trying to smuggle in drugs, people, money. I mean, you know, this is what a border guard's job should be. Now they want that same person to look at my iPod and say, this is illegal, this is legal. Again, how the hell would they know that what's on my MP3? Okay, if my iPod only has music, how would they know one track versus the other is illegal? How would they know? It's not like the track says, you know, Van Halen, Hot for Teacher, in parentheses, illegally downloaded. It doesn't say that. It just says Van Halen, Hot for Teacher. That's all it says. There's no possible way for them to know what is and isn't illegal on my MP3 player. There's just no way. It's not possible for them to know that. Same thing with the movies. I could just as easily buy a movie from Amazon, I could just as easily buy a movie from iTunes, or any number of other places legally and put it on my iPod, versus, say, ripping a DVD at home and converting it to the iPod format and then putting it on there. They would have no possible way of knowing that that movie is illegally on my iPod. There's just no way. There's just no possible way. And last but not least, they want federal agencies to work on this. They want to include the Department of Homeland Security. Okay, this is the government agency that's tasked with keeping us safe from terrorists. And now they're lumping people who download a movie or borrow a buddy's CD and rip it to the hard drive in the same category as a terrorist. Okay? This is ridiculous. The recording industry and the movie industry, they need to take their heads out of their asses and join the rest of us in reality. This is just absolute nonsense that tramples on everything that we as Americans know and value as a freedom. They want to inspect my PC's hard drive? Go fuck yourself. Seriously. I just cannot even begin to fathom who would do this. It's just absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. That's kind of it as far as the podcast goes, as far as ACTA goes, and what it's about. Last part of it is really going to be about what you can do to keep this thing from really moving forward. Well, I should say this first. The information used to write this podcast and to record it, information was found on Wikipedia, Electronic Frontier Foundation website, which is www.eff.org. I pulled some information from a phenomenal article written by Molly Wood entitled Dear President Obama, Get ACTA Out in the Open, which was written on 3/18/10. It can be found on news.cnet.com. Also from two different Ars Technica stories, The World, Get Ready for the DMCA, ACTA's Internet Chapter Leaks, which is written 2/22 of 2010, and then that last story I had mentioned to you, the Government Accountability Agency, finding that the numbers were total bullshit as far as piracy goes. So that's where the information came from. So as I was writing the script for the show here, I just kept on getting madder and madder and madder as I went. I happened to, part of the information came from the Electronic Frontier Foundation website. And while I was there, I just was so angry. I gave him $55. I said, you know what, here's a donation. Please fight this. And I wrote, they ask you, why'd you donate? And I said, kill ACTA now. That was my reasoning for it. The nice thing is I got a pretty kick-ass t-shirt out of it, too. It's a picture of the U.S. federal government seal with the eagle on there. The eagle is actually illegally wiretapping something, so that's kind of cool. So what can you do? Well, see, part of the problem, too, with this treaty is that President Obama is trying to get this thing approved without congressional hearings and without congressional approval, which is just bullshit, man. This is why we have Congress. This is why we have the Senate. It's to debate things like this out in the open so people are aware of it and the elected representatives can make a choice and vote on this thing according to their conscience and according to the wishes of their constituency. You can do like I did, and you can contact your senators, and I contacted both of mine, and I told them, I said, look, man, I grasp the concept of the treaty and that it does need to be written in some way, shape, or form because there are people that try to counterfeit money and other physical goods. I'm okay with that part because I don't think there's really any justification for illegally making a copy of someone's clothing or whatever and then selling it as if it were real or selling it as a wink and a nod, just a knockoff, because that happens everywhere. Write your senator and tell him or her ACTA needs to be released to the public. It needs to be debated, and the provisions, especially for the internet that we've discussed here, they need to be reworded. They need to be worded in the present. This is not the dark ages of technology. You know these things that they're trying to take away from us, and make it illegal to do, are, I think, in most cases, fair use. They really are. Definitely write them, let them know. You can also email Victoria Espinel, who is the, as I mentioned before, is the, I don't think I actually gave out her title, I apologize, I didn't have it handy. Victoria Espinel is the U.S. Intellectual Property Enforcement Coordinator, and she's the person that the MPAA and the RIA sent their draconian wish list to of spyware and ISP filtering. You can email her at intellectualproperty@omb.eop.gov. I'm going to pull straight up from a fantastic article that Molly Wood wrote recently on April 15th titled It's Time to Fight the Copyright Police State. And again, that's on news.cnet.com. And she is essentially trying to rally the geeks against ACTA and against this pro-IP legislation. I think she put it in such a wonderful way that I'm just going to essentially read what she read. I'm giving her full credit for it, but I think she just says it in such a way that it just it's the truth, and I really can't say it any better. So when you email, and this can be used, by the way, too, for contacting your senator about ACTA as well. You want to tell them that no intellectual property legislation is complete without explicitly defined legal exceptions for personal fair use of your property, including ripping CDs and DVDs, limited personal sharing of music, movies, and other digital property, and protections for device and network innovations. Let them know that your ISP is not a cop, and we'd rather have our cops solving murders and stopping terrorist attacks than checking MP3s players at the border and securing movie theaters on release day. So, you know, again, so I've mentioned before how much I admire Molly Wood, and, you know, that little blurb from her article just clearly, I think, and succinctly nails down what we're trying to talk about here, people, is that you know, the RIAA and the MPAA is trying to take away what I see as clearly defined fair use uses of their products, and they're trying to essentially this is the few of ruining it for the many, for those few people that go out and do massive copyright violations of music and movies. You know, that small percentage is making it for the rest of us harder and harder to live a normal life online. So definitely email Victoria Espinel at the U.S. Intellectual Property Enforcement Agency. Definitely contact your senators. Contact your congressperson, too. Contact anybody in government that you think could listen. That's it, people. That's why the title of the show is Act Out Against ACTA. I hope you're as equally inflamed and enraged as I am about this topic, and hope it motivates you to do what I did and contact your legislators. Let them know what you think, and let them know what you think needs to happen. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Dow of Tech. I'm your host, Mark Prestash. Just wanted to say a couple quick thanks. First off to PodSafe Audio for the intro and the outro track. Music can be found at www.podsafeaudio.com. The introduction music is Schrodinger's Cat Paradox by C-Jax. The closing music is Anhelos, the remastered version by Leechmaster. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, insults, or praise, prefer the praise over the insults, please feel free to email me at taospotting@gmail.com. That is taospotting@gmail.com. If you like what you hear on the Dow of Tech podcast, follow me on Twitter. I am twitter.com/markprestash, MarkPrestash, and as I always say, my Twitter feed is more of a life stream than just a tech thing, so you're just as likely to see stuff about my family, my wife, my kids, my cooking, as you will about technology and other tech-related topics. So don't forget, guys, after the show ends, stay tuned, because I'm going to be playing the promo trailer for Jake Bible's Dead Mech, so definitely stay tuned and check that out. So once you guys check that out, I hope you definitely, again, download the podcast and let Jake know that you heard about it from this podcast. Let him know where you're getting the information from. I would appreciate that very much. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed this week's show, and until next week, hope you have a good one. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
In the future, after the zombie apocalypse decimates the world, human civilization tries to put itself back together again. Their secret weapon? The mechs. Massive robotic battle machines. But what happens when a mech pilot dies in his mech and becomes a zombie? Hell on Earth is unleashed. Presenting Jake Bible's Dead Mech, the world's first drabble novel. If you love zombies, horror, sci-fi, futuristic battle machines, blood, guts, gore, and cannibals, oh, so many cannibals, then visit jakebible.com for more info and to download the free podcast novel, Jake Bible's Dead Mech. The future may not be completely dead, but it's on its way.